Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show that explores all avenues of transformation and aims to offer some useful nuggets that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, no matter how contrary that might seem, just like the nightingale, the bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, delighted as ever that you've joined me today. There's a lot to talk about, and as ever, I have a great guest lined up for you. Sarah Jane Clark will be talking about food addiction later, but first, a roundup of some of the well-being discoveries I've been reading up on and what's been going on energetically. If you follow me on social media, you may have seen me talking about the moon. Here's what I was saying. As I had a wander down by the shore near where I live the other day. It's not the best August we've ever had, but it is a special 1st of August because today is a not a harvest moon, but a sturgeon moon, and it's a super moon. So it's when the moon is very big in the sky, and it's called a sturgeon moon because Native Americans and people who gave these names to moons found that this was a great time for them to catch sturgeon. Don't think there's any sturgeon in there. There have been plenty of jellyfish lately, actually. But there's plenty of other fish and plenty of wild birds as well, which is lovely to see. You know, the thing about this August, apart from the weather being awful today and not really being very August-like at all, is that we have two supermoons, topping and tailing August. One today on the 1st of August and one on the 31st of August. And that is a blue moon. That's where the saying once in a blue moon comes from, because they don't come around that often, in fact, very rarely. So we've got one this month in August, and it's topping and tailing the month, as I say. And, you know, both moons are supermoons. And really, what I'm seeing everybody saying about August is it's going to be a bit of a crazy month. And it's a month where we've all got to get our act together. We always say that, don't we? We've got to get our act together. And this is a month where we're going to really be pushed to get on with the things that we need to get on with in life. So, have a look out the window tonight. See if you can see a beautiful big supermoon. I'll be looking tonight, but look, it doesn't look as if I'll be able to see very much, does it? That might lift. So, see if you can see the big supermoon, and then just have a think about what it is that you need to really be getting on with this month as we go through August before the next supermoon on the 31st. And no, I didn't see the moon that night. Better luck at the end of the month, hopefully, for that rare double whammy of a blue moon. Now, hold on to your hats and enjoy the ride through August, because you're really being called to honour your best life this month. Now, quite often in the natural health and well-being world, we find modern science catching up with indigenous wisdom. And another example of that has come out of Australia recently, where researchers are finding ants can give bees a run for their money in the honey stakes. The honey from honeypot ants has been used for, well, probably thousands of years by First Nations people as a food and as a medicine to treat things like colds and sore throats. And now researchers in Australia have found that it's highly effective against a bacterium strain known as golden staph. It's just as effective as Manuka honey, apparently, which is obviously produced by bees. But it works through a different mechanism, which the researchers believe to be an antimicrobial peptide that's unique to the ants. And as yet, they don't know why ant honey should work against golden staph, which is essentially a human pathogen that lives on the skin and can cause serious infections. And it's doubtful you'll be able to buy jars of ant honey anytime soon. They won't be rivaling Manuka honey in the supermarket aisles. See, these ants are found in desert areas, and the honey is a scarce resource. The way it's made is a special kind of worker ant. It's overfed nectar by other ants until their abdomens are engorged. And then in times of famine or food shortage, they can regurgitate that honey and keep the colony alive. So that and the cultural significance means it's more likely scientists will be looking to identify the active ingredients to replicate rather than setting up honeypot ant farms. Fascinating how nature provides us with all that we need, though, isn't it? And so on to an irregular feature of Tales from the Veg Patch. How does your garden grow? If you have one, that is. On our patch, we follow a no-dig approach and rely on keeping our soil in excellent condition, as well as some companion planting, and of course, we have a zero tolerance for harmful chemicals that might upset the eco-balance, not to mention our own physical well-being. Last year, our courgettes, pumpkins and squashes were a roaring success. We had courgettes or zucchini that seemed to grow to the size of marrows if we only turned our backs on them for just a day or so. They were extraordinarily abundant. So I was curious when a friend sent me a video of someone's very abundant courgette and cucumber crop. It took me straight back to last year, but this gardener had been using a process called electroculture, which I had to look up. The website electroculture.life explains it like this. Electroculture is a simple method of applying atmospheric, in brackets free, electricity to significantly increase plant growth. Using basic materials like copper wire and/or magnets to vitalize the soil and increase yields by 100 to 300%. It also eliminates the need for fertilizer and pesticides. And it explains that it's not electricity as we know it, but a breath of energy which stimulates and increases the fertility of the soil. Well, that's the explanation on the website electroculture.life. And it seems to be very, very simple. One inexpensive way of doing it is apparently to just create a spiral antenna of copper wire that you then plant into the soil to collect and direct the energy in the atmosphere that pushes it down into the earth. Now, it sounds almost too good to be true, doesn't it? But I think it's something I'm going to have to try out next year. Something else I'll be trying later this year is picking sea buckthorn. Now, this is a true superfood that grows abundantly on the coastline near me, and I must admit, the last time I foraged for this seaside gem, it was so time-consuming, not to mention tricky, thanks to the long thorns on these plants, that I decided to give it a miss for the past couple of years. But I've been inspired once more after bumping into the people behind Sea Buckthorn Scotland at a farmer's market recently. Sea buckthorn is native to southeast Scotland and researchers are still testing its properties, but for years it's been used for anti-aging as it's packed full of antioxidants and phytonutrients which also help boost the immune system. On top of that, it's an absolute powerhouse of vitamins and nutrients, including a bunch of omega fatty acids, and it's credited with healing skin conditions, lowering cholesterol and supporting a healthy digestion, even helping with obesity. And then there are claims for improving mental clarity too. So you can see that this small orange coloured berry really packs a punch. You can use the juice or the pulp, and I'm drinking a small glass every day at the moment, or the oil, which is great for skin. And then there are the leaves, which make a very healthy tea, so all round a great plant apart from those thorns. The trouble is picking and preparing wild sea buckthorn is such a labour-intensive and difficult job that the end result tends to be expensive. And believe me, gloves are a must as protection against those long thorns if you're foraging for it. But it is worth the trouble. It's really versatile as an ingredient in the kitchen, and to cap it all, I just love the taste. So fun and games to come later in the year when I go foraging for my own sea buckthorn, but right now it's time to take a short break. We'll be back with my guest, Sarah Jane Clark, and her story about food addiction right after this from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ Stenhouse, the practical alchemist. And after all that talk about food before the break, it's time to look at the darker side of eating with today's guest, Sarah Jane Clark. Sarah is a living example of how you can overcome overeating and go from weighing over 21 stone to fitting into a size 10 dress, that's size 6 in the USA. But it wasn't all about body image for Sarah, as she explained when we got together to talk about her food addiction and her achievement. Now, you've had quite the journey with weight loss. Well, just tell us, what started you realizing that you needed to do something? And tell us your story, basically.
So, yeah, I'd been a yo-yo dieter all of my life. By the age of 14, I'd already done Weight Watchers and I'd already done the Cambridge diet. And looking back, I wasn't even overweight. I just developed at a really early age. My period started at 11 and I had a female woman's body, you know, and hated all the curves because I always compared myself to my friends who were still straight up, straight down. Thought by going on a diet that I would change my entire body shape, which obviously I didn't. So for someone that had low self-esteem, it really did trigger what was an unhealthy relationship with food and magnify it. So I used food in all the wrong ways. I had low self-esteem. My first relationship started at 14 and I was in that relationship until I was 28. And obviously when you have low self-esteem, you tend to attract a certain type of person that kind of knows that they can have power over you, I suppose, with their harsh words. And I was criticized. And so I just used food in an inappropriate way, and it was to make me feel better if I was hurt by being told I was fat and ugly and useless. Then I would try to eat away those feelings, and it was always high sugar sweet foods, and I associated that with numbing pain. And that can be anything. If somebody hurt my feelings, if somebody made a comment, and I'd gotten so large that, you know, people were making comments out in restaurants and people were staring if I was walking along the street. But I hadn't been on a set of scales, JJ, for such a long time. I was in denial completely about the size I was. And then age 26, my period stopped. So I made a GP's appointment regarding this. And I had a really bad experience. I was treated like I was very, very unintelligent. Mm. I was, she was like, well, you're vastly overweight. Let's get you on the scales. And spoken to you like that. And what I can, you know, looking back, I was very underconfident and I felt like I was being told off at school. So I hopped on these scales. They were old fashioned dial scales. I can see them vividly in my mind with the black leather, and they went up to 20 stone. So I stepped onto the scales and the dial went round and went round again. And it was hovering between 21 and a half and 22 stone. And I described that point as one of the lowest points in my life. I was utterly shocked beyond belief. It took my breath away, this number that was in front of me. And my cheeks were burning. And the GP said to me, you know, if you carry on like this, you are going to be dead by the time you're 40. You're not going to make 40. You're going to eat yourself to death. You know, and your body is shutting down, and this is why your periods have stopped, you know. Right. And she sent me away with no help or support, just told me to stop overeating.
Mm.
And it was clear for anyone to see that here was a woman whose mental health wasn't great. And so I always use that as my crossroads. I walked out of there, and that was probably one of the lowest points in my life. And had there been a bridge, you know, I had tears streaming down my face. I felt real guilt, real shame. I did a lot of my eating in secret. So I had nobody to turn to, no one to talk to. And I just thought, I wish there was a bridge that I could go and jump off to end all of this.
Yeah,
but you know, it was the catalyst for change. But I could have gone one of two ways. I'm very, very, very aware of that. I could have used all that hurt and pain, gone to the shop on the way home, and gone back to my old negative eating habits. But because this was for my health, whenever I tried to lose weight before, it's always been to look a certain way or to have a certain number on a scale, or to be a certain clothes size. But this time was different. This time was about my actual health. And I began my weight loss journey there that day. Something changed. And, you know, I work with others now supporting them. But I always treat disordered eating, because that's what it is, with great empathy, because I know that there's an awful lot of mental health associated with any kind of eating disorder.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. But I had a very painful, very lonely journey.
Mm.
And yeah, it all began and stemmed from that doctor's appointment. That's where that journey began. And I was 26 years old then.
Yeah. It's very easy for people to say, oh, just don't eat as much. But when you're in that cycle of low self-esteem and using food to mask the feelings that you have, it's not easy to stop eating as much. And eating all the wrong things as well. You were just saying, you know, it was always sugary stuff. So, you know, you'd go and get yourself a whole pack of donuts or something like that, probably, yeah? And, and just sit down and eat the lot. Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. And, you know, I would say that I am 110% a food addict, 110%. And it's really funny, because I found the NHS will treat any other addiction. You know, if you have a smoking, you know, and that's have a negative impact on your health, they'll give you patches, they'll set you up with a support program.
Yeah.
You know, alcohol addicts have the AA program, but for me as a food addict, there was nothing. And that's why I started the work that I do now, because I've lived the experience. I know what works, I know what doesn't work. And, you know, I have educated myself, I have learned about food, and the highly processed food that's out there is so cheap. You know, at the moment with the cost of living crisis, it's so easy to get hooked on, because it's made to be highly addictive.
Oh, you know, it is.
It has no nutritional value. Hence, you can keep eating more because your brain is not recognizing that you're full, because your body doesn't recognize it as food.
Yeah, yeah, it's so interesting, isn't it? That's so true. And I remember I was foraging on the coast here earlier this year, and we got lots of sea spaghetti, and I remember cooking some fresh, soon after we'd, and I'd never really had sea spaghetti before. And it's highly nutritious, absolutely bursting with nutrition. And I had a small plate of this with garlic and an oil dressing. And I was amazed by how full I felt so quickly. Because it was so densely nutritious.
And it's funny because now I try to eat really good nutritious food.
Yeah.
And I have noticed that you can eat a lot less, and you're fuller a lot quicker. And I just, you know, I feel so much better. I can't begin to tell you. I have an extremely different life now.
Yeah.
And I started my journey with such simple steps. I started because I would be ridiculed in the street, because people would point and stare and make very hurtful comments. I waited until it was dark every night. So around 9 p.m., I would go out and walk for 30 minutes. And that's where I began, because I was so big. Walking up the stairs to bed would exhaust me. I'd be out of breath. My body hurt. Lugging all that weight around. And so I literally began just by walking for 30 minutes a day. And I couldn't believe, after 2 weeks of such a simple step, how much better I felt. Being outdoors, being out in the fresh air. And that's where it all began. Mm. And I found the better I felt, the less I wanted to go back to my old habits. Because actually that feeling of feeling healthy and feeling alive and feeling vibrant is infectious and as addictive as all of the negative stuff. So that's where it all began.
Yeah, and I was going to say to you, what started you off the path of addiction to food? So it was the exercise that did it, but just gentle exercise, but regular exercise.
Yeah, every day, and setting that intention every day. And setting intentions is something that is a key part to me sustaining weight loss, because only 3% of people that lose weight keep it off. That's why the diet industry is such a multi-billion pound profit making failure of a system that encourages us to hate our bodies and be dissatisfied, because it's also unsustainable. Whereas if you're making small changes and you're doing those consistently, your body and your health and your fitness will pay you back by feeling amazing. So I started off with that, and drinking water. I never drank water. I drank coffee or full sugar Coke. That's all I used to drink.
Wow. Yeah.
All the sugar, all the caffeine. And I just felt, like the brain fog had lifted away. I would quite often be quite slow in answering questions and things like that. And now when I look back, I think, well, goodness me, you know, that's because you just were so dehydrated.
And your whole body was so sluggish, presumably, because,
yes, completely. It was really sad. The more I've got to learn, JJ, the more I realise now that I was addicted. And I call myself a food addict, because I am very, very aware that I could go back to those habits. So that's why I always set my intentions in the morning. I get up early every day. I exercise before I start working every day. And I just make it a daily routine that's as natural to me as getting up and brushing my teeth. I have changed my lifestyle, not gone on a diet. I've not done a fad. You know, I've not had a gastric band, and I don't knock those people that do that. I can understand the desperation and the unhappiness, but that's not what I did. I took a step-by-step approach, and that is what has worked for me and has done. I'm 52 now.
And you're looking great. Yeah.
Thank
52
you.
And
thank
looking
you
fantastic. And so just to be clear, how much weight did you lose and how long did it take you to lose it?
So I have lost over 12 and a half stone. So I'm just over 9 stone now. And I was hovering between 21 and a half to 22 stone. So it's a lot of weight. I did it gradually and I lost over six stone just by walking. I didn't join a gym until I had got down to 15 stone. So again, you know, people think they have to change everything all
yeah.
at once.
Yeah.
But simply by walking, I lost over 6 stone. As simple as that, just walking every
that
day.
That is fantastic. And so then how long were you walking for to lose that amount of weight?
So by that period of time, I was 28. So it had taken 2 years to lose mm-hmm. that. But I'd also had two babies as well because my periods restarted. So
wow.
I then had a tandem pram, which was so heavy and so hard to push. It was a workout in itself. But I would say with the babies, we would go out and walk for an hour a day.
Yeah.
By that point, I'd worked up to that. And obviously mm-hmm. was pushing this great big heavy contraption every day. Mm-hmm. So it was a really great way of getting my children out. And then, you know, when they were toddlers, we were always running around outside. I was a great believer in fresh air for the children. So
yeah,
it was as simple as that. And then introduced other types of exercise when I got down to 15 stone. I found, as I learned as I was going along, that I would plateau. I'd lose some weight and then I'd plateau, and then I'd be like, right, okay, what should I look at changing now? And just changing one thing at a time, not focusing on everything. The minute I felt overwhelmed, I wanted to go back to my old coping mechanisms of eating.
Yeah.
So and obviously losing that amount of weight, it wasn't all linear. There were bumps in the road and there were times when it was more of a struggle than not. But the routine, the structure and setting the intention every day is what keeps me going and keeps it sustainable as well. Because I'm not doing anything that's a fad or unachievable to sustain.
That's such a good point to make there. And we'll hear more wisdom from Sarah Jane Clark in a moment. First, it's time for another break to hear more from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. I'm JJ, the practical alchemist, and my guest today is Sarah Jane Clark, who before the break was talking about the processes she has in place every day to keep her on track with her eating and her weight. Yeah, and I think it's important to say that because a lot of people, they think that they would go on a diet and then suddenly they'd lose all this weight and that's, you know, that's it. That's all they have to do is just eat lettuce for, you know, however long. And then it, you know, and then people get disheartened because they're not losing the weight that they want to lose or think they should be losing. And so I think it is
important.
Where is
the enjoyment? And where is the enjoyment in that?
Yeah, there's not.
Eating is a pleasure. And when you're eating healthy food, it is a delicious pleasure, like you say, when you ate that sea spaghetti, you know, when you're eating delicious, nutritious food. I don't understand why healthy food has such a negative rap, because actually it's the most delicious food there is. Those natural flavours and herbs and, you know, I've taught myself a lot about nutrition. I'm by no means, you know, an expert. But just the nature of what I've done through the experience of it, I've taught myself a lot. And a massive part of this journey, JJ, has been my mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think a lot of the diet clubs, all these diets, doesn't even mention any of that.
No.
So I mentioned to you earlier about my low self-confidence and my low self-esteem. All of those issues have been addressed along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise you'll go back to your old coping mechanisms. I call it papering over the cracks. If you just change what you eat and you change nothing else, then you'll go back to those habits, because the real root cause for me was my lack of self-worth, not feeling good enough, not feeling clever enough, not feeling pretty enough, always comparing myself to others, which is the root of all unhappiness, especially in females. You know, all of our bodies are different shapes, sizes, and that should, we should learn to accept ourselves today. This is where I am. This is me. And I love me today.
Yeah.
Imperfectly perfect. And I want to be the healthiest version of myself.
And I think
each day I wake up. Yeah, yeah. And I set the intention. I am choosing to be healthy.
Yeah.
I don't see it as denial.
No, and I think that's the key as well. And let's also just say that we're not saying that everybody who has a bit of extra weight is unhealthy, because some people might be quite healthy, although they're carrying a few extra pounds. But there is a correlation, quite a strong correlation, between overweight and mental issues and also physical issues. I mean, a lot of people put on weight because they're on certain pharmaceutical drugs and that sort of thing, which is, you know, a real issue for a lot of people. And we're not shaming anybody who is overweight.
Absolutely not. And I'm a big fan of open water swimming. And when I go there, you see all ages, all shapes.
All shapes, all ages.
I love the feel-good factor of that. You know, it's so non-judgmental. It's a really healthy mental health environment to be in.
Yeah.
You know, all of these, you've got this supportive people around you, and you can't help but leave there and feel on top of the world. And that's been really crucial in times of stress or anxiety, to go and do something like that instead of revert back to my old toxic habits of eating lots and lots of highly processed food. I've found different ways to cope with stresses and anxieties and worries and fears and not feeling good enough. And definitely exercise has been crucial in my mental health and healing.
Yeah.
Healing myself from my food addiction.
Yeah.
It's been huge.
Absolutely. Huge. And I'm glad you mentioned the swimming. I know we've talked before and you said that you were a big fan of open water swimming, which obviously I am. And just before we started recording this, I was talking about the swim I had this morning, and I just felt fantastic after that swim. The sun was shining. There was a lot of seaweed in the water, which actually gave me a bit of a seaweed scrub, I reckoned, you know, by the end of it, which I thought was going to be pretty healthy. So I was quite happy with that. A lot of people don't like feeling seaweed on their bodies, but I don't mind it at all. And I came out of that water feeling absolutely brilliant this morning. Absolutely brilliant. It was a gorgeous day. We're watching, you know, the seabirds, all kinds of different wildlife, and it was just gorgeous. Now, that is so good for you mentally. No matter what issues you have, that is so good for you.
Yeah, and when you look at how the brain works as well, all the endorphins, all the feel-good hormones and chemicals are released.
Exactly.
And I found that with exercise. Instead of turning to food for it, I found other ways.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I used to carry all that extra weight around, my body would hurt from the moment I got up and put my foot to the floor when I was getting out of bed. Everything hurt. I was in pain. All my joints would hurt. I would ache.
Yeah.
Was constantly tired. And, you know, like I was saying earlier, I never drank any water. I drank full sugar Coke and coffee because I thought I needed that caffeine all the time, when actually I was severely dehydrated. And now I have so much energy, even though, you know, I'm 52 now, I've got way more energy than I had when I was in my 20s. So the impact on our bodies and on what went by the foods and what we're consuming is huge.
Yeah.
The zest I have for life now, it's like I've had two different lives, and it's something I never take for granted. I'm always really grateful for this second chance at life as a slim person. But yeah, I don't judge anybody for their size, or, and I understand it's been a lived, painful experience for me. Yeah. So have great empathy for people. And that's why I really enjoy working with others, because it's so rewarding for me, because I know how it feels. It's an amazing feeling.
Yeah, to feel it must be.
With the energy that I have now, yeah.
And tell me how you work with other people. So you actually coach people, you help people to lose weight.
Yes.
And yeah. Especially people with food addiction, right?
Yeah, with food addictions. So, and by that, I mean, it's people that are using food, and in a way, it's not a hunger. Mm. You know, our food is our fuel. So I wrote a 5-week program that I deliver in small groups online via Zoom, and I do that, or I do one-to-one sessions. Some people don't feel comfortable enough sharing, and that's yeah. fine. But we look at all the reasons why we are eating. Mm. So most people are eating in secret. They will normally have a type of food that they turn to. You know, we call it binging. Mm-hmm. So for instance, at work, someone might say to you, I've had such a bad day today at work. I'm going to have a glass of wine tonight.
Mm.
Nobody, you know, I think food addiction is still very, very taboo, because you would not hear someone in an office full of people go, do you know what? I've had such a bad day today. It's been so stressful. I'm going to go to Sainsbury's on the way home and buy a family sized pack of donuts and 3 packets of chocolate biscuits, and I'm going to sit on my own and consume all this food. But that's how I was using food. And I always ate in secret. And that's why I had such great shame about it, because this food had control over me. Mm-hmm. The more I've learned about the food, as we were saying earlier, and the nutrition, it's made to be highly addictive. You know, these mm-hmm. food production companies, they don't care if they're giving you type 2 diabetes or heart disease through their food. All yeah. they care about is the profit they're making. Mm-hmm. But actually, you're not giving your body any nutrients. So I wanted to raise awareness of food addiction, and that's why I started the work that I do. So we really look at the reasons behind why we are eating. You know, so anyone could go on a diet, follow an eating plan and lose weight. But I describe that as papering over the cracks. Those issues, all those reasons why you eat, are still going to be there. And unless you do that hard, painful work, you will never have the healthy, stable relationship with food that we all should have. Yeah. You know, I still have moments where I could quite easily go back to the food. And that's why I call myself an addict. I could go back to those habits, but I found other coping mechanisms now. I know what triggers me, so I try to remove myself from certain situations, and I will go to the lake and have a swim, or go to the gym and have a workout, yeah. or I'll put my trainers on, go out the door, and either walk or run. You know, I've found different ways of using food in an appropriate manner now. I yeah. eat when I am hungry, and no longer to mask some sort of pain or stress like I used to. So I help other people recognize that within themselves. We talk about coping mechanisms and mental health tools and what we can do instead, and really noticing what our triggers are. And that can be quite difficult and painful, but it's very, very, very worthwhile. I have had 3 people leave their jobs.
Really?
And then get total career changes. Yeah, because the one thing that was triggering their binging on food was a really highly stressful job, and they were working yeah. so many hours,
mm-hmm.
you know. Mm-hmm. So it really does make you stop and think. But it works.
Yeah.
It works.
Well, that sounds fantastic. And yes, I mean, there's always another layer of, it doesn't matter whether we're, you know, a mum staying at home, or a single parent family, or whether we're in a high powered job or whatever, there are always going to be triggers. It's how we deal with those triggers, isn't it? And for some people, it's the food that really comes in, and we start eating inappropriately. I don't know about you, but I have noticed I actually have eaten less and less ultra processed food over the years. And now if I have something that's ultra processed, I just think it tastes like cardboard. I don't think it tastes of anything. My taste buds have changed, I think.
Completely changed. And you taste the artificial flavour. And you're like, what's that taste? Or another thing, interesting, JJ, my body has got had very strong reactions. So I've not eaten any in a Chinese restaurant or that kind of food for about 6 years. And the last time I did, it was somebody was leaving a place of work I was at. And so we'd all gone out and it was like a buffet style thing. So I was trying various dishes. I went to go to toilet and I came over very, very dizzy, very, very hot, and thought I was going to pass out. And I haven't eaten that type of food since. So my body has got very good at telling me, Sarah, stop doing this to me. And that's really strange. And I think if we could tune into that far more, because like I said to you earlier, I feel great when I eat well now. And equally, I feel awful if I do eat the ultra-processed foods. They have such a negative effect on my skin, my hair, and digestive issues. I'll bloat. I'll get pains and cramps in my stomach. So my body doesn't like it.
Yeah.
So the better quality food I've eaten for longer periods of time, if I go back or try to eat something like that. I mean, I don't say I eat a perfect diet.
No, I don't either.
Yeah, we've all got busy lives, but I try to as much of the time as I can.
Yeah.
And my body repays me well for that by having a lot of energy. My skin will look clear. My hair will be shiny. So it really does link into my sense of well-being, the fuel that I put in my body.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like you really have been through the mill, but you've found a really good way of dealing with life now.
Yeah.
And as I say, you look, obviously our listeners can't see you, but you look really well and healthy, and of course, you know, I'm sure very trim. I'm seeing you sitting down, so you know.
Yeah, so I'm a dress size 10 now. So
well, that's brilliant, isn't it?
And my biggest, I was size 28, and I did buy one skirt that was a size 30. So yeah,
wow.
It's been a huge transformation.
Yeah, well, that is fantastic. And now, if anybody has been inspired by listening to you and saying to themselves, oh, wow, you know, maybe I should ask Sarah to help me. Mm-hmm. Where do they find out all about you?
Yeah, I have a website and it's www.stepbystepwithsarahjane.co.uk. And on there are links to the courses that I run. There's photographs and the stories, all the different things that I've tried, open water swimming. I've run them. 4 marathons, over 50 half marathons, and I didn't take up running until I was 40. You can also sign up for my 5-week course or one-to-ones, or I have recently started a support group. I run this on a Thursday live, so you have live access to me, and we normally talk between 60 and 90 minutes, and we talk about different topics each week. And that's for £15 a month, so it's fantastic value for money, the membership to our group that we want to grow, because I really, really want to raise awareness of food addiction. I think it's still far too taboo out there. And I also run a Facebook support group that's free to access, and on my website there are links to my Instagram, my Facebook, and my email address is on there as well. So please go and take a look, even out of curiosity, if you've listened to this and are intrigued as to what I look like before and after. There's lots of photographs.
Oh, yeah, the before and afters, yeah.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
It's overwhelming. I think there's one picture of me sat on a beach, and the top of my arm is the size of what my quad thigh is.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Even I can't believe it. I look at it and think, wow, but she's still inside of me, that person. That's why I have such empathy for it, because it's a lived experience that you can't learn. And and now I just want to give back and help others as much as possible.
And also offer some support which you won't necessarily get from your local GP.
That was definitely my experience. And I think because it was so lonely and painful, and I'm a great believer in sharing is healing.
Yeah.
You know, the membership group that I run on a Thursday evening is a fantastic way of healing. And it's helping heal me too. Hearing other people. And it's making me think, because I was treated like I was very unintelligent by my GP.
Yeah. Well, there is a tendency, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she talked like I was in a really slow, patronizing manner. And it's like, I'm not stupid. You know, I'm well educated. You know, I don't know who you think you're talking to. But yeah, so it's about giving people respect and understanding, you know, such a judgmental society now. And this is a safe space that I've created for people to share with each other that are totally going to understand. Because they're in the same position as you are. So please reach out, please contact.
It sounds beautiful. Well, you know, I think that's one of the most important things you can do is offer that safe space where people can explore how they can do something differently, how they can be different in the way they approach food and just be understood in terms of what the underlying issues are, what's causing this food addiction. And I agree with you. I think it really is a thing, but it's not terribly well recognised and maybe it should be. So well done.
Thank you. Well done
for raising awareness. And I do recommend anybody who's interested gets in touch with you, you know, goes onto your website and has a good old look around.
Thank you so much. And thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for coming on the show. So there you are. If you have a food addiction or think you have, or you just need to lose some weight and want support with that, Sarah could be the woman to help you. And with that, it's the end of the show. I hope you've enjoyed it and found it useful. Remember, you can listen to all of our shows on all the main podcast platforms these days. And if you like what you hear or if they've helped you, do help us spread the word by sharing them. You never know, it might just be what someone you know needs to hear. Also, if you haven't already, do check out the show that I co-host with psychiatrist and coach Dr. Mark Gulston right here on UK Health Radio. It's called Hurt Less, Live More, and Mark and I share experiences, anecdotes and wisdom with some great guests who have had the courage to feel into their feelings and heal. So thank you for listening today. Do head over to my website, it's thepracticalalchemist.uk, to find out more. I'll be posting lots about sea buckthorn as well as all kinds of ways to transform our lives to living in nature and in line with nature. You can subscribe to my newsletter to be the first to hear about it all, or find me as The Practical Alchemist on Instagram and Facebook. And of course, remember to join me for more alchemy here on UK Health Radio and the UK Health Radio podcast next time. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.